with you on Margarita.
Just
Thank you. George, are you ready? Good morning. I'm going to call the meeting to order. We have a couple members of the commission that are not here yet, and I think that they will be here. We haven't heard that they weren't going to be here, so, but we'll get started. Anyway, the commissioners that are here are Mr. Yamasaki, Commissioner Semel, and myself, and we're waiting for two others. So can I have a motion for the adoption of our agenda? All in favor? Aye. And can I have an adoption for the regular meeting minutes from May 23rd? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Calling on Mr. Rohr.
Good morning, commissioners. This is on. Good morning.
Good morning.
3 out of 5 commissioners. I'll start with just a quick report from the federal level, mostly around the White House. As you probably saw in the media, the news reports that ICE was going to be conducting immigration raids nationwide this month. San Francisco was specifically mentioned. In response, the mayor issued a public statement in opposition, of course, and the mayor's office, as well as several other departments, including ours, are ramping up our social media and other communication channels, talking to residents about their rights, about the SF Rapid Response Network hotline, which is a hotline that they can call should there be issues, communications to staff on how to handle the situation should ICE come to our buildings, things like that, which is what we have done, you know, sort of in the past. We're just refreshing it. As you know, the president announced, or ICE announced, they were delaying those raids, but who knows what may happen down the road. It's important that our citizens, though, are aware of what their rights are and that they know at least where they could seek some help and support. The other item is sort of an internal change in response to the Trump administration's increased use of rulemaking, federal rulemaking, to really affect policy. Really, I think in recognition that the administration is not going to get a lot of things through Congress. So where they can, they're using rulemaking to change federal policy that, of course, affects us at the local level. Examples are the public charge rule, the rule on eligibility for immigrant families in public housing, changes to the federal poverty level, things like that. In rulemaking, as you know, there's a period where public comment is received, and many of these federal rule changes affect more than one city department. And what we've been doing is on our own, and sometimes in consultation with the city attorney, we'll draft our comments. What the city and the mayor's office would like us to do now, as well as the city attorney, is coordinate. They will lead coordinating the affected departments and speak with a single voice from the city, from the mayor or from the city attorney, most often from the mayor. It just helps to be consistent across departments and also lays groundwork and puts on the record our issues for potential future litigation challenging some of these federal rule changes. We typically work closely with the mayor's office and city attorney on this, so it doesn't really change our internal procedures, but it's a good, it's I think, a positive movement to just strengthen our voice against a lot of these rules that we don't agree with. At the state level, today, the governor, and he might have already this morning, is to sign the budget. So he'll either sign the budget, he'll veto the entire budget, or he'll line item veto. It'll probably be in the middle. He'll probably strike out some things. I don't think any of our budget augmentations at the state level will be affected by a blue pencil. But let me walk through a few of the items that we're able to get through the legislature post the governor's May budget revision. I've mentioned these items before, but suffice it to say that we did really well. All the issues that I brought before you that sort of were in budget conference committee came out in our favor, and so I'll walk through those real quick. The first one is the Family Urgent Response System, known as FERS, which is a 24-hour crisis hotline for our resource family, our caregivers of foster children. should there be crisis in the home. And it's a $15 million in year one and then $30 million growing. It won't be implemented. The implementation keeps getting pushed back. The state has to set up a hotline. We have to get a federal waiver because we want to draw down federal Medicaid dollars to support this. We were already moving towards a locally funded urgent response system or mobile response system, so these state funds will help us implement our local initiative as well. We were able to secure, the legislature secured $25 million to extend the Bringing Families Home program. This was a program where we were one of the grant recipients to provide housing support for families engaged in their child welfare system. The program was due to expire June 30th of this year, so this funding will allow us to continue the program in partnership with Homeless Prenatal. Medi-Cal expansion went through, and this is an expansion of eligibility for undocumented adults up to age 26 who are low income. We're the first state in the country to expand Medi-Cal in California coverage for this population. And also some significant improvements to CalWORKs, which I have talked about. The grant increase of 13% did go through. That will increase a family of three's CalWORKs grant to $993 a month starting October 1st. And because of the way our local ordinances are written for our CAP program, the CAP grant will increase to $588 a month. Again, October 1st is when that goes into effect. Also, the changes to how income is treated towards grant calculation and eligibility for CalWORKs, we are also successful in getting that changed in recognition of the increased minimum wage and, of course, the increased cost of living in California. Prior to the change, a CalWORKs family who was working and had earned income, when their eligibility for CalWORKs is calculated, we disregard the first $225. We don't count that against them. And then 50% of income moving forward. So what the change did is increase the initial income that does not count at all to $500, and then 50% is discounted. And this will begin in June. And it will increase each subsequent June 1st until it hits $600 disregard and 50%. Again, I mean, sort of the mechanics, the details you don't really need to know. What you need to be aware of is that it will increase eligibility and allow families who are working to stay on CalWORKs longer to avail themselves of our services, including, you know, child care and other supportive services to increase their, hopefully to increase their employment and allow them to increase their wages. We received an additional $30 million in federal and state funds to administer our CalFresh expansion to SSI recipients, and we are progressing quite well on that, which I'll report on in a little bit. And then there's a state earned income tax credit expansion from about a $400 million cost or investment to $1.2 billion. I haven't seen the details on who specifically will be affected, but the concept was to allow families with higher incomes to still receive the credit, basically to expand the pie for those our working low-income families. The local budget, we concluded our budget hearing last week. We had two hearings before the board in June. Since we hadn't met, we met before the mayor introduced her budget to the board in June. I'll just tell you what the mayor added to our budget in the submission in June. And this is on top of what we had submitted to you in February and the budget that you had approved to go to the controller's office and the mayor in February. So this is on top of that. Five new eligibility workers to do benefits eligibility work in our navigation centers and shelters. We had 69 what we call position substitutions. This is where we change, we take a vacant position and we change what that position is to allow us flexibility to, you know, expand in certain areas or contract where necessary. We do this because the mayor this year and in prior years has instructed departments that she would not approve any new FTEs. So the way that we sort of try to remain nimble in that way is to look at our vacant positions and repurpose them where we can and where it calls for. So all of those were approved except for one. We also got in our budget a wage differential for our Jobs Now placements. So in recognition of the increased minimum compensation ordinance, we bumped up the wages for our public service trainees, and that was in the budget. And then we also got 20 new funded career pathway positions for our public service trainees, and this allows PSTs to get a better opportunity for city employment after that their subsidized position concludes. What the mayor didn't include is our proposal to establish an office, a diversity, equity, and inclusion office, which was a team of three. We did ask for new FTEs. We thought we maybe could get it through for this purpose. That was not included. There is some citywide work around establishing DE&I offices in both Human Resources Department as well as the Human Rights Commission. I think that's really sort of where those positions fell to. And then in our hearing, of course, you know, the budget analyst proposes a whole set of reductions after reviewing our budget. And after the initial raft of reductions that the budget analyst proposed to us or recommended to the board, we were able to negotiate it down to a very limited set of reductions costing about $1.6 million in one-time money, so current year, well, budget year, which starts in 3 days. And then $333,000 of ongoing reductions, which is very, very small considering we have a budget now that's over $1 billion agency-wide. The savings mostly were right-sizing budgets, so if we were underspending in certain areas, we just took reductions that wouldn't affect program. It would just sort of look at what our current spending projections would be and align the budget with the spending. Part of our emergency preparedness work, we had a workshop with other city departments in DEM a couple weeks ago regarding PG&E and their announcement that they'll be shutting off power grids when fire danger appears. PG&E has a protocol for this. They've told counties that they'd like to give us 48 hours notice. San Francisco, you don't think we won't be affected because we're not in a wildfire zone, but because we're getting our transmission lines through wildfire zones, we certainly could be affected with a lengthy power outage. PG&E says 48 hours to 72 hours. This happened in Butte County last month. They only had 18 hours notice. The duration of outage could be as long as 5 or 6 days. There'd be a minimum of 24 hours generally. So the workshop was really about preparedness of city departments and for us, of course, how we would be prepared to maintain continuity of operations, as well as our role in assessing vulnerable populations should there be a lengthy power outage. These would be individuals who might be on IHSS, could be other folks who are disabled, frail, who would need to rely on electricity to support medical equipment and things like that. So we would have a role there with Department of Public Health. In SFBN, so our CalFresh expansion to SSI recipients is going really well, and we've far surpassed the enrollment numbers that we thought in the first, now 7 weeks. We began May 1st. We're doing Saturday overtime hours. We're doing lengthy overtime during the week as well. We've seen, as of last week, beginning May 1st, 13,000 individuals apply for the expanded CalFresh. Yeah, that's a big number. In May, we had four times the normal number of applicants. Four times the number of monthly applicants because of the expansion. So keep in mind there are 41,000 individuals thereabouts on SSI in San Francisco. 13,000 have already applied, and 95% of those who applied were deemed eligible. We are probably 4 or 5 times in terms of our penetration rate. So that's about it's over 25%. It's close to 30%. Most counties are at like 10%, so we're really doing a nice job. And so, kudos to our SFBN staff and the management there, our HR division for getting folks on board and trained. We're working hard, and the waits are still long in our lobbies and phones, but we're doing a really nice job. And then Medi-Cal, just a couple of state audits. We're working with the State Department of Healthcare Services on two different audits. One is addressing what's called meds alerts, but system alerts when two automated systems don't match up in terms of cases. And then they're also auditing our Medi-Cal renewal process for Medi-Cal cases. So we'll get those findings probably in a month or so. In CalWORKs, we're embarking on a pretty big shift of state oversight that we that we as counties and CWDA actually supported and drafted a couple years ago. It's called CalWORKS OAR, or CalWORKS Outcomes and Accountability Review. And really what the attempt is to, similarly to what we did in child welfare with AB 636 a dozen years ago or so, it's really a CQI, a continuous quality improvement process for CalWORKS, collecting, analyzing, disseminating data county by county on how well we're doing it, not just work participation rate, which is the only thing we're really measured on, but other really more important metrics. So what CalOAR requires us to do is a self-assessment, meaning we look at our CalWORKS program to see where our strengths and our weaknesses are based on dozens of metrics. Based on our self-assessment, we then develop a system improvement plan. We begin this in the first cohort next July. The new metrics that we're going to be sort of held accountable to, or at least measuring ourselves against, will be done in phases. The first set's going to begin this summer. Just to give you a sense on kind of what we're looking at in CalWORKS beyond just work participation rate, it's employment rate of current CalWORKS individuals, wage progression, so are families increasing their employment, post-CalWORKS employment rate, so how many families are leaving because they're employed, program reentries, and then intergenerational enrollment, which is sort of multi-generational receipt of benefits. So those are just some examples of kind of the richer sets of data we're going to be using to examine our CalWORKS program with an eye towards continuing to improve it. The Board of Supervisors, Supervisor Mendelman specifically, called for a hearing on substance abuse treatment on demand, sort of a citywide hearing, but we were one of the three departments that the supervisor wanted to hear from, which, you know, we're not central to provision of substance abuse treatment on demand. That falls under public health, but we do have a program that I thought I would highlight just given that we'll be probably presenting this at the hearing in probably next month. And that's the work we're doing in our CAPS program with Drug Medi-Cal. And what this is, in 2018, we launched a substance abuse treatment pilot at CAP, and is really to expand our on-site counseling services and determine if clients could benefit from counseling and assistance to deal with substance abuse. We developed this because we really did see an unmet need in our CAP population. Our disability screenings revealed substance abuse a lot, and so we wanted to develop something internal that we could turn clients to stabilize them and ultimately maybe refer them to treatment. So we started the pilot with general fund dollars, but because of the Affordable Care Act and the federal Drug Medi-Cal funding becoming available, we think the program will be supported with maybe 90% of state federal dollars. We've served 57 clients so far, but if the Medi-Cal billing is successful, we could expand to probably 225 clients. So just a good way to sort of, when you have a client in front of you who clearly is suffering from, you know, substance abuse or addiction, to get someone to assist that person right away is a really effective way to engage them and hopefully engage them into treatment down the road. And then in Family and Children's Services, just a couple of events that we had this month and last month. The ILSP, or Independent Living Skills graduation, was held Thursday, June 20th. We had about 60 graduates, which is really down from, we used to have about 120, 130 graduates a year. It was very well attended. It was a nice graduation. And, of course, special thanks to Commissioner Yamasaki, who attended the event and continues to support ILSP. The other was the softball tournament, which you know about, and raising funds for the Foster Youth Fund, which we administer here at HSA. Well attended again. We won a couple games. I just wanted to take this moment to thank all of the volunteers, especially Dan Kelly from the planning staff, the folks who played, and of course Commissioner Yamasaki for being a great fan and going out there. It's a great event, brings city departments together and raises a lot of money for a very good cause. So thank you, Commissioner, for your steadfast support. I'll conclude with that and open to questions.
Question. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Trent.
You're welcome.
Moving forward to our Employee of the Month, the Commission is pleased to honor Michael Booth, Employment and Training Specialist, Workforce Development Division, also known as WDD. as the June 2019 Employee of the Month. Michael joined the Workforce Development Division as an employment specialist in 2015 and is currently the lead onboarding specialist at 3120 Mission Street, serving CAP and CalFresh participants seeking Jobs Now services. Prior to his promotion to WDD, Michael worked as an eligibility worker and employment specialist with CAP and CalWORKs for 14 years. As the lead onboarding specialist for the highly successful Jobs Now program, Michael continually demonstrates outstanding leadership skills in addition to proactive participation in his daily responsibilities. He is dedicated, conscientious, and resourceful when working with Jobs Now participants. Michael is able to motivate participants to accomplish their personal goals and find creative solutions to overcome unforeseen obstacles that emerge along the way. His supervisor and section and program managers frequently receive accolades related to his exceptional service from colleagues, clients, and participants alike. Additionally, Michael has taken the lead to implement several key projects and has graciously accepted additional responsibilities to support his team during the recent reorganization with WDD. He solicited staff feedback that led to business process improvements for the Jobs Now onboarding, job preparation, and placement services. Michael has led various data testing work groups and developed work processes for the issuance of supportive services via SharePoint. He was instrumental in developing staff guidelines for and providing peer assistance with Launchpad, the new case data tracking system. He also provided in-service trainings to partner agencies regarding WDD services and participated in meetings with external stakeholders to discuss CFET offerings. Not only is Michael a motivating team leader for his team, he is also a supportive peer who is always willing to help whenever asked. He brings an astute sense of humor to the job, which is especially appreciated on challenging days. Michael is truly dedicated to Jobs Now participants and staff, and he is truly deserving of this award. It is with gratitude and great pride that we honor Michael and recognize his services to his colleagues and clients. Thank you, Michael. Trent.
Thank you, President Kahn. Congratulations, Michael. I talk about the Jobs Now program a lot here and with other city departments and anyone who'll listen when I talk about how great the program is. And I often get from our key city departments, DPW, Rec and Park, we need more. Not only because the work is there, but because they're high quality performers. And so with your help, we're able to place folks quicker, as we continue to expand populations, as our public assistance caseloads or cash assistance caseloads decline, keep expanding to CalFresh and then beyond. And this program will not only be effective now, but will continue to expand and reach other populations. So your work obviously is critical to us being able to make the program as effective as it is. So thank you. Very well deserved.
Manager Brady Santos and program manager Bart Ellison for
Our next item is our consent calendar. Can I have a motion to approve our consent calendar? All in favor? Aye. So moved. Moving on to item 7, commission business. Requesting authorization for the Department of Human Services to purchase and distribute gift cards as incentives. John.
Good morning, President Khan, commissioners. I'm John Sitakawa, contracts director for HSA. And so HSA requests authorization to purchase gift cards in the amount of $238,000 over 2 years. The effective period will be July 1, 2019 to 6/31/2021. And this item is different than the contracts and grants that we usually bring before you. Gift cards are considered purchasing, and purchasing generally doesn't come before the commission. Around September 2017, so almost 2 years ago, City Purchasing or OCA requested that HSA put policies in place and get commission approval for the purchase of gift cards. So in conjunction with the city attorney's office and the controllers, we created a policy. And in November of that year, of 2017, the department did get approval through this commission for the purchase and distribution of gift cards and the policy. And so the authorization that you gave us ends June 30th of this year. And so we're requesting kind of a new period of authorization starting July 1 for 2 years. And so gift cards are generally used as incentives for clients in various programs and for caregivers, such as foster parents or our resource families, IHSS caregivers. The most common use that we have for incentives is in the Families Rising program, where they're used for incentives for clients when they accomplish goals on their case plans. Within the memo, you see an attached policy, and the policy reflects internal controls that we put in place. We view gift cards as quasi-cash, and we try to treat them the same as we would for petty cash. So in December, the controller's office also issued a citywide policy on gift cards, and so we made some adjustments to the department's policy to reflect that. The main ones being that there's a $25 limit, maximum limit for gift cards, and how long program can hold on to gift cards before they have to be distributed. We're glad to answer any questions you have regarding the purchase of gift cards or our policy.
All in favor?
Thank you.
Item B, requesting authorization to enter a new agreement with Hamilton Families to provide housing, locator, connector, and case management services.
Good morning, Commissioners. Eva Iraeta, Community Services Program Monitor for the Welfare to Work Services. The Department of Human Services requests authorization to enter into a new grant agreement with Hamilton Families for the provision of housing locator, housing connector, and case management services to CalWORKs participants for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2020, in the amount of $3,686,000 plus 10% contingency, for a revised total grant amount not to exceed $4,054,600. Homelessness had been identified as one of the major barriers that impacts the CalWORKs family's ability to participate in required activities and meet program requirements to lead to self-sufficiency. Senate Bill 855 allocated the state funding for housing supports to homeless CalWORKs recipients. Since the inception of the CalWORKs housing support program in 2014, 364 CalWORKs families had been placed in permanent housing. Grantee will provide CalWORKs families living in shelters, transitional housing programs, and families who are at risk of losing their permanent housing with housing locator services, which includes identifying units and providing unit descriptions for housing match and placement process. Housing connector services, which include matching and placing families with available housing units and assisting families throughout the lease application and placement process, and housing stabilization services for out-of-county housing placements, which includes intensive case management through regular meetings with participants to track progress towards employment and housing goals. Referrals to other supportive services and housing support through landlord mediation as needed. Hamilton families will provide placement and housing stabilization services for 110 families. I'm available to answer any questions, and Julie Millman from Hamilton Families is here as well.
Thank you for being here, Julie. Any questions? And I ask for a motion to approve. All in favor?
Thank you.
Item C, Consumer Credit Counseling Service of San Francisco, doing business as Balance. Good name.
Good morning, President Kahn and Commissioners. My name is Andy Beatley Hegler. I'm the program monitor for the Smart Money Coaching contract. The Department of Human Services requests authorization to enter into a new grant agreement with Balance for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2023, in the amount of $900,000 plus a 10% contingency not to exceed $990,000. The purpose of the grant is to provide Smart Money Coaching Services, which is one-on-one financial counseling to residents of San Francisco who are on CalWORKs, PAYS, CalWORKs, or Medi-Cal and are in an employment activity or path. In 2015, the San Francisco Office of Financial Empowerment, which is OFE, in partnership with the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, conducted the San Francisco Financial Counseling Integration Pilot. The goal of the pilot was to provide or to utilize proven financial empowerment approaches such as opening a bank account, improving a credit score, or decreasing debt. The pilot created a partnership with a range of city agencies, including Human Services Agency, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, and other relevant city departments and partner organizations. Balance will present 50 intensive hour-long workshops for HSA participants to support movement towards financial self-sufficiency with the goal of engaging clients in one-on-one coaching. The grantee will serve 500 total clients annually through a total of 1,040 one-on-one coaching sessions. These sessions include needs assessment and triage for financial crisis, and they will also assist participants in creation of a comprehensive household budget. I'm available to answer any questions, and we've got Rico Delgadillo here, the interim CEO and president of Balance. We've also got Akil Al-Jarray here, and he is the coaching programs manager.
I have a question. Where do the workshops take place?
They take place at HSA sites. So they'll be at here at 170 Otis, also at 3120 Mission. Am I missing any? And 1800 Oakdale. 1800 Oakdale as well, yeah.
Do you have any idea of how many people you will be having at these workshops?
What was that? Excuse me?
How many people?
Do you have any idea of how many people?
Commissioner Semmel, I think it's 500 a year?
Yes. Yeah, the number of HSA participants who will receive coaching is 500, and that includes new and returning. So some participants will have already seen a coach with Balance in a past year, and what we found is it's you can get a lot more accomplished when you come back for an additional visit. And so you may have come for a first visit last year, then you come again for an additional visit this year, and then you feel like you're a little bit more prepared for, you know, the path to self-sufficiency.
Yeah. Do people sign up to attend the workshops?
They do effectively. They can be referred by their caseworker. Uh-huh. Balance has a system where they can sign up online, they can do it over the phone. So there's a couple different ways they can do it. They could do it on their own, or they could do it through their caseworker.
If I wanted to attend one of those sessions, can I do that?
It's funny you ask that, because we get the question not uncommonly from HSA staff. And so I think the Balance is willing to work with HSA staff. What we've really tried to do is educate the staff about the services aside from, you know, the counseling sessions. Uh-huh. But I think Balance is also willing to work.
We actually encourage it, yes.
Yeah.
So that's a yes, but you can't say that.
Okay. Well, can I ask for a motion of approval? Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Thank you, guys. You're good. I just want to take this opportunity. You know, you get these contract packets before you every month, and behind these packets is a hell of a lot of work. And one of the key staff, it's a lot of different staff, but is our contract analysts. This is a particular contract analyst's final contract that's before you. He's been with us for 10 years, and he's retiring. I believe today is his last day. I just want to take this opportunity to, on your behalf, thank him for very thorough work for 10 years. He is definitely an I dotter and a T crosser, and I'd like him just to stand up and be recognized by staff and by you.
His name is David Flores.
I wasn't able to say his name for the record. It's David Flores. And David, on behalf of myself and staff, thank you so much for your assiduous work for 10 years. It's really appreciated.
Thank you.
You will be missed, David.
Item D, the Department of Human Service requests authorization to enter into a new grant agreement with Alternative Family Services.
Good morning, President Kahn and Commissioners. My name is Angela Ramos, and I am the Program Manager over RFA in the Family and Children's Services Division. HSA requests authorization to enter into a new grant with Alternative Family in the amount of $2,100,777, with a contingency for a total amount not to exceed $2,384. I think it's in front of you guys. The term will be for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2022, and provides funding. Resource families are a critical component of the continuum of care reform for foster children. If we are unable to leave children with their parents, we try to place children with families, ideally caregivers. If we are unable to place with relatives, we look at county certified resource families and families, foster family agency homes. This contract is directed to counting resource families. This contract provides training to both current and potential county resource families, including pre-service training, substance abuse, and HIV training, and advanced training such as how to deal with grief and trauma, and how to deal with kids with specialized needs. AFS will also provide quarterly conference-style training and training the trainers in pre-service so they can assist in training prospective caregivers. This training is important in developing and maintaining quality care providers for our out-of-home dependents. I'm here today with Babel Osper from Alternative Family Services, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? All in favor? So moved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item E, requesting authorization to enter a new grant agreement with Safe and Sound for mandatory reporting training and intervention services.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Hello. My name is Karita Zhang, and I'm a program analyst with Family and Children Services. I'm here respectfully requesting authorization to enter into a new grant with Safe and Sound, formerly the San Francisco Child Abuse Prevention Center, for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2022, in an amount of $1,895,101, plus a 10% contingency for a total grant amount not to exceed $2,084,611. There are two purposes to this grant. Number one, to educate the public about child abuse and child abuse reporting requirements, and to provide intervention services for families at risk of abuse and or neglect, including commercially sexually exploited children and young adults. And number two, to continue community education and training on child abuse to the most at-risk populations. Safe and Sound was originally designated by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in 1982 as the county's child abuse council to promote awareness of the abuse and neglect of children, facilitate interagency cooperation, and facilitate trainings of professionals in the detection and prevention of child abuse and neglect. With the approval of this new grant, Safe and Sound will be able to continue to provide community and professional education on child abuse prevention to mandated reporters, facilitate interagency convening to improve systemic efforts to prevent child abuse, and to provide clinical services and case management services to at-risk families. Safe and Sound has worked closely with HSA and other interagency partners for nearly four decades on these programs and improvement efforts. But what's more impressive is that they have maintained an excellent track record during this entire time in exceeding their service and outcome objectives. So here are some examples of their excellent track record. In fiscal year 17-18, Safe and Sound provided a total of 65 mandated reporter trainings to reach 1,716 mandated reporters from a variety of child-serving organizations, including elementary, public, and private schools, early childhood education and child care entities, first responder institutions, after-school organizations, summer camp programs, and mental health organizations. And also in fiscal year 17-18, Safe and Sound provided services to a total of 290 unduplicated parents and caregivers in their variety of their various intervention programs. And the objective for the period was 120. The numbers for fiscal year 18-19 are not final yet, but preliminary data shows a very similar pattern. So I'm here to answer any questions you have about this request. And I have here with me Jenny Perlman, the Associate Director of Strategic Partnership and Policy from Safe and Sound. And she'll be also happy to answer any questions you have about their services.
Any questions?
Yes, I have a question. This applies only to children. What about the mothers?
They help the family, the entire family.
Thank you.
Can I have a motion to approve, please? All in favor? So moved.
Thank you.
Item F, Family Support Services, Susan Liu.
Good morning, President and Commissioners. I'm Denise Corvino, the Deputy Director from the Office of Early Care and Education, and with me I have Susan Liu, who's our drop-in child care supervisor and the program manager for this contract. We're also joined by Bruce Williams, a program director at Family Support Services, and Elgin, and I'm sorry I don't know your last name, who also works for Family Support Services. I've got a great backup team if you have any questions. We are requesting authorization to modify the existing grant with Family Support Services for provision of emergency child care services so that we can extend the contract for an additional 2 years for the period of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2021, with an additional amount of $1,342,605 plus a 10% contingency for a new total grant amount not to exceed $3,506,806. The emergency backup child care services includes in-home and out-of-home emergency backup child care and mildly ill care for eligible children from ages birth to age 12, rapid care to rapid response participants, and emergency backup staffing for coverage at our HSA OECE drop-in child care centers. Family Support Services is able to provide CalWORKs families with options for continuous child care resources in order to support families toward increased productivity and reduce disruptions in work and training. Family Support Services also provides essential backup staffing coverage for our drop-in child care centers. Although we have on-call child care specialists to provide staffing coverage, their availability is very limited, especially for same-day absences, so we heavily rely on drop-in childcare centers, heavily rely on family support services to provide backup staffing coverages on a regular basis. And so Susan, Bruce, and Elgin are here should you have any questions. Thank you.
Any questions, commissioners? All in favor? So moved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item G is Edgewood Center for Children and Families. Good morning, Irina.
Good morning, President Kong, commissioners. My name is Irina Kadantseva. I'm a program analyst with Family and Children Services. Also today is joining us Cynthia Green, a program director with Edgewood Center.
Hello, good morning.
I'm here today to see your authorization to modify an existing contract with Edgewood Center for Family and Children, Edgewood Center for Children and Services for the period of July 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2021 for the provision of kinship services to resource families, formerly known as relative caregivers, and San Francisco minor and non-minor dependents in their care. Edgewood Center has been a partner with Family and Children Services for over 15 years in providing a wide range of services to children and youth involved in a child welfare system. Under this contract, Edgewood provides kinship services to resource families who have assumed the role of caretaker to San Francisco minor and non-minor dependents placed in their care. Specifically, the kinship program offers case management, parenting support groups, respite programs, and advocacy services. In addition, they provide educational workshops, wellness activities for caregivers, youth enrichment activities, and assist caregivers with accessing and navigating community-based services. As a result of this program, over 100 families each year receive services that help caretakers face unique challenges to successfully raising children and have strengthened families' capacity through effective parenting methods that address children's and youth's needs. Throughout the duration of our partnership, Edgewood Kinship Program has consistently met their annual contract objectives and outcomes and continues to implement innovative ways to meet the needs of the families they serve. At this time, I'm happy to answer any questions or concerns you may have regarding this request. And I thank you for your consideration.
Any questions, commissioners? All in favor?
Thank you.
Item H, Jeffrey Nagy. Family Builders by Adoption.
Good morning, President Kahn, commissioners. As you said, my name is Jeffrey Nagy. My name is Jeffrey Nagy. I'm a program support analyst with FCS. I'm here to request the commission's authorization to modify the existing grant agreement with Family Builders by Adoption. This would be for the period of July 1st, 2016 through June 30th, 2021. Family Builders and HSA are longtime partners and have worked together successfully to provide adoption services to children and families in San Francisco. These services include permanency coaching, child and youth specific permanency individualized services, preparation, training, and support for families certified for foster care or approved for adoption. The recently completed performance review demonstrates that Family Builders is meeting or exceeding performance expectations in most areas. For example, Family Builders has exceeded their service and outcome objectives for providing family finding services and one-on-one permanency services by the end of the third quarter this year. This modification allows the grantee to continue that trend while increasing its capacity to meet the demand for their services. At this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Any questions, commissioners? Can I have a motion to approve? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Thank you. Okay. Item I, Hamilton Family Center.
Great. So the next item is for a contract to provide services for FCS's Bringing Families Home program. Bringing Families Home assists homeless families with child welfare involvement. We request the Commission's authorization to modify the existing contract for Hamilton Family Center to provide property management services at 538 Holloway. This is also, well, this is for the period of July 1st, 2018 to June 30th, 2020. 538 Holloway serves as temporary housing for Bringing Families Home participants while they transition from homelessness to stable housing. The services provided by the grantee include 24-hour on-site staffing, monitoring a facility for health and safety, communication and weekly case conferencing with partners at the Human Service Agency and Homeless Prenatal Program, and notifying the Human Service Agency of any maintenance or repair needs. Hamilton Family has performed well over the current fiscal year and is meeting their service and outcome objectives. Approving this modification will allow Hamilton to shelter 20 additional families over the next fiscal year. I welcome any questions if you have them.
How difficult is it to find the housing?
I'm sorry?
How difficult is it to find the housing?
It's challenging. The housing is very expensive, and it's hard to find in San Francisco. There were a number of challenges over the last year that their program went to. Funding. We found SF Housing Authority actually ran into some financial troubles, and they froze issuance of the FUP voucher, which is the primary way that our families are housed. So actually, we had pretty good outcomes considering that we weren't able to house families over 3 months of the year. We're still expecting to meet all of our program goals over that time.
All in favor? So moved. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, Jeffrey, you're here again.
I'm here. I'm back. So next item is also related to Bringing Families Home.
Can you stand a little closer to the microphone?
Sure. The next item is also related to Bringing Families Home. We request the Commission's authorization to modify the existing grant agreement for Homeless Prenatal Program to provide housing case management, navigation, and broker services as part of the program. Homeless Prenatal Program has partnered with FCS since 2012 and provides case management services to the families participating in the Bringing Families Home Rapid Rehousing Program. These services include assessing for housing needs, enrollment and housing readiness workshops, housing search, landlord engagement, support and preparation for and during the lease-up process, housing stabilization and retention services. Homeless Prenatal Program also provides support around data collecting and reporting. The grantee has performed well during the 2018 and 19 fiscal year. Through the first three quarters of the year, they've leased up 20 families and they are on track to meet the target of leasing up 25 families for the year. This performance is particularly exceptional when you consider that the program was virtually frozen for 3 months. That's the freeze on vouchers that I mentioned earlier. We are confident that the grantee would have already met the goal of 25 housed families for the year much earlier if it were not for that freeze. This budget mod will allow the county to house an additional 20 families in the next fiscal year. We're also joined with Dan Bowersox today from Homeless Prenatal Program, and I'd welcome any of your questions at this time.
Any questions? Can I ask for a motion for approval? All in favor?
Thank you.
And there's been no request for public comment, so I'd like to ask for a motion for adjournment, and I'm going to turn the gavel over to Commissioner Yamasaki.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's with heavy heart that I move the adjournment of today's meeting in memory of the late Sululagi Palega Sr., who was born July 16, 1947, in the village of Ofu, Manua, American Samoa and passed away tragically here on June 6th, 2019. We served together on this commission, and Sulu performed many roles through many years for the city and county of San Francisco and its citizens. He never forgot his roots in Samoa and held the title of High Chief in the village, his native village of Ofu. On Monday, there was a celebration of life at St. Paul's Church in Noe Valley, and the church was filled. Interestingly, as I was entering the church, a man on the sidewalk who was not going to the service itself asked me for whom the memorial was being held. And I told him it was Sulu Pulega. And he said, oh, he's been here a long time. He's a good man. And that sums him up. So, Mr. President, I move the adjournment of today's meeting in memory of Sululagi Aliwa'a Pulega Sr.
We are adjourned. George, thank you for bringing that to our attention.